Let's get back to the drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200. Now, it's time for Need to Know Basis.
Welcome back. Hour two of the drive here on TSN 1200. Lever Sage, AJ Jack Quebec, Matt Conesvito with you until 6 o'clock. Still to come, Dave Naylor from TSN. Talk more about what the CFL is going through and what is not happening, unfortunately, right now in the CFL. But here's what you need to know. We'll start in the NHL, where the Vegas Golden Knights have fired Pete DeBoer after parts of three seasons at the helm. And, of course, Vegas spectacularly missed the playoffs this year. And for that, Pete DeBoer pays the price. The Islanders have hired their guy, and that was associate coach Lane Lambert, who gets the job after the Islanders fired Barry Trotz. Couple of notes here at the World Hockey Championships. Canada with a 5-1 victory over Slovakia. Pierre-Luc Dubois had a couple goals. Nick Holden had an assist in the victory. Canada now 3-0. Unfortunately, and we're crossing our fingers here that it's not real bad news, but Tim Stützle did leave the game. Germany and France, that is 2-2, going into the third period with an apparent knee injury, and they've already said he will not be back in the game. So hopefully for Tim Stützle, that is a little bit of a hiccup and nothing more, but a little bit of worry about that when it comes to one of the Sens' top stars. The Masterton Trophy finalists were named, and Carey Price's name was there as the Dano Chara and Kevin Hayes, the three finalists for the trophy that best exemplifies the qualities and perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to the game. It's a huge drive matchup in baseball. The Seattle Mariners and the Toronto Blue Jays. Head-to-head, AJ. So we look forward to that as well. And just to finish off on a bit of a lighter note here and what you need to know, Matt, this is more me telling you in the audience because AJ knows. But AJ Jakubek, nothing. Terry Marcotte, too. 2-0 Terry Marcotte leads. Ugh. In two completely.
Was there ever a doubt?
Well, it seems like there was. Two completely different sports. It seems like there was a doubt because this one very, very close as well. But AJ on the wrong end of a pickleball loss this morning.
The race was very close too.
People that
no, AJ, the race was very close too. You gutted it out.
Yeah.
It was a lot closer than it had any business
being.
Two
legs versus one leg. But this was a team.
Oh, no. You're going to throw your teammate under the bus? Oh, no. Oh, no.
No.
Yeah, I know. I'm joking. I was setting you up to refute me.
Oh, this was a team thing, right? It's doubles. And it was Annie Bergeron-Oliver in her second ever pickleball game with me. Second ever pickleball game against Terry Marcotte. Second ever pickleball game. And Patricia Bowl, who I don't know how many games she has played. I do know she has her own racket.
Oh, she's a racket, all right.
Stuntman Stu had all of like the top line hockey equipment.
Yeah, I think Patricia Bowl is a better pickleball player than Stuntman Stu is hockey player.
No,
I
she's
can
a terrific.
Assure you, you've seen Patricia play pickleball.
Yeah, I told you going in that
she is one of the best players in the league.
I love Terry Marcotte. You know that, right? We all have the most respect for a guy like Terry Marcotte. But I told you going in, AJ, there's a weak link on the team, and it's not Patricia. So what happened? Like that, what happened? You didn't hit every ball at Terry Marcotte? The guy's got a bad hip, okay? He's got a bad hip.
By the way, you know how long our game was? Like, you would think pickleball, like, should be 10 minutes and you're out.
Sometimes it ends up being that way.
Our game was an hour.
Well,
close. Our game was a full hour.
So sets are to 11.
Yes.
And you have to win by two. What was the score?
We lost the first set 11-9.
Mm-hmm.
Won the second set 11-9. Lost the third set 12-10.
Oh, man. That's like, it's kind of like the Leafs, right? Like, right there, good team. Everything you'd want in a team, just can't close.
We're not like the Leafs.
Just can't close.
We have not been. We're like the Kraken, okay? We have played two games each. We are like the Kraken. We have yet to get over the hump yet. But we are two games in. We're 1-1.
All right.
We just happen to lose to...
Terry Marcotte.
To Patricia and Terry, with one of those players being significantly a bigger factor in the result than the other.
Which one?
Probably the one that has her own racket. Probably. Okay.
Right. We're just pointing out.
I know you guys all love the AJ Terry
stuff. The audience doesn't care about the pickleball stuff, and I get it. But it is, folks, understand that I got a call soon thereafter about AJ losing to Terry Marcotte.
Who'd you get a call from?
You.
I texted you.
No, you called me today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, that was a couple hours.
Okay,
later.
AJ. You called me earlier today, and the first thing out of your mouth was we're 1-1. I didn't even know what you were talking about. I'm like, I'm trying to rack my brain.
1-1.
1-1. I'm like, what?
You know what? Like Dave Smart says, you need a loss, right?
You're not out of it.
You need a loss, and you need to learn. I wasn't very good today, by the way. Like, if I'm ranking the players, I'm going to say Patricia 1, Annie 2.
Terry 3, AJ 4.
Terry 4. AJ 3, I wasn't very good.
So you had 2 and 3, they had 1 and 4, and you lost.
Yeah, I needed to be better. Simple as that.
All right.
How many unforced errors?
Well, too many early because, again, not a lot of experience. Trying to hit too many winners early, and then we're getting behind, and it's like, okay, you know what? Just keep the ball in play.
Now, what
and
time was
the
match?
When we kept the ball in play, we generally did well.
What time was the match?
9 a.m.
So how was your Wendy's breakfast?
Oh, we went to Zach's, actually.
Oh, you broke the routine?
Well, it was after a loss. Well, everyone wanted to go to Zach's. It was in the market, so went to Zach's. All good. 1-1.
Was it 10-10?
It was 10-9 for us.
This is why I ask follow-up questions, folks. This is why. No, it is a sport, and people, they're just kind of getting into pickleball. When you watch it, and as Matt watched it earlier, there was a clip of you guys playing, and he showed it to me. He's like, well, sorry, man, I'll do this. He's like, if this is what pickleball is, I could play pickleball. And I'm like, this is for people trying to keep the ball in play, not, as AJ said, trying to hit winners doesn't work, and now you keep the ball in play and you win a point. It's not the most exciting point in the world.
Well, that's why you need to play more than twice.
Yeah. Well, you can't until you play, so you can't do anything about it. You just play, and we get to talk about you losing to Terry again, which is awesome. We'll move on, though. I'm supposed to play tonight at 7. Yeah, it ain't happening.
Why not?
Why? You've read the weather twice already?
I mean, there's a chance that maybe there's no thunder. No, there's like going to be a thunderstorm.
It's like 100% or something. Like,
come on.
Later on.
Maybe you'll have the best pickleball match of your life. Like the...
you can't play. The
was
ball.
He the reverend in Caddyshack? The priest?
Yeah.
Father? He goes out, the heavy stuff's not coming for a while.
Yeah. With wiffle balls and slippery courts.
And lightning. Maybe stay away.
Yeah.
Stay in if there's lightning.
Not a good idea. I'm packed for it, but I don't think it's happening today. Let's get into a couple of things there you need to know, AJ. Pete DeBoer, gone in Vegas. This one feels like they tried to bring in Pete DeBoer a couple of years ago to get the team to the next level. They had a disastrous year. I don't think it's the coach's fault why they didn't make the playoffs, but he's paying the price, and maybe there's another good coach out there that didn't deserve to be fired, but has been fired because of the circumstances of the rest of the team. Feels that way.
Feels like they never should have got rid of Gerard Gallant in the first place.
Yep.
Who's off to the round 2 now?
Mm-hmm.
And I get that could have gone either way, but feels like they ditched that one a little too soon. I don't know. Like, there is no love lost between them and the Sharks, right?
None.
And then all of a sudden you bring in, you got rid of your coach who's popular, and you bring in their coach who was a rival.
Because you're smarter than everybody else. That's
yeah.
That's
I don't
why.
Know if that was ever a good fit. And I think a lot of Pete DeBoer as a head coach mm-hmm. in the NHL, but I'd never really liked how that went down.
Yep.
Like, if you're a player, you probably didn't like the fact that Gerard Gallant got turfed, and then you probably didn't feel 100% right about who you're replacing him with. So, yeah, we'll see what they do. We'll see, like, a guy like a Barry Trotz, right? He's going to have a lot of different options. A lot of different options. Maybe this is one of them. Winnipeg. We'll see on a team like Toronto, right? I don't expect them to get rid of their head coach, but if all of a sudden you have the chance to bring in Barry Trotz, you can thank Sheldon for doing a really good job and move on from him.
If you have a chance to go out and get one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the NHL, that can bring some structure to your very, very talented team, I don't know how you're not exploring the idea. And it doesn't mean Sheldon Keefe isn't a really good coach, but he's had opportunities to get the team over the hump and he's failed. Barry Trotz might not have been available before, but he's available now.
I don't know if there's any other teams that made the playoffs that might make a coaching change. I don't know if Rick Bowness is going to be back.
The way it sounded after last night was that no, but
maybe he's just going to say, you know what?
Yeah.
This is it for me. So that's one, but I wouldn't really call them a team on the up and up. So I kind of feel like Toronto, if they went in that direction, I don't think they fire Sheldon Keefe, but again, if you can get Barry Trotz, like that might be one of those ones where you say, okay, well, we're keeping Sheldon, but quietly behind the scenes, we're going to poke around and see if we can bring Barry Trotz here. No, we can't. All right. You know what? Status quo.
Well, you said it before. If the St. Louis Blues beat the Colorado Avalanche, I might be looking around too. If I'm Colorado. To try and get my team to a different level.
To the next level, right?
Yep. 100%. You have to. It is your job as the general manager or the president or the owner to put your players in the best spot to try and win. The very best opportunity to try and win. And sometimes with that comes very difficult decisions.
And I'm not sure Florida is 100%.
Oh, I would agree with you there too. If they get wiped out here by Tampa.
Right? Like this is going to be, okay, you beat Washington. That's fine. You were expected to.
And you barely did.
Yeah, I mean, they were the better team. They're especially games 4, 5, and 6, but probably a little bit closer than they would have liked.
Yeah, but that I know what you mean. Game 4 was a post away from being 3 games to 1, and it could have been all she wrote. Post, like a half a foot on an empty net.
Yeah, you can say that about
not
all
many.
Pretty much all these series. 5 of them went 7, right? That series went 6. You're talking about a post in a series that went 6, 5 of them went 7. So you could say that about almost every series, with the exception of obviously Colorado or Nashville.
Okay, we'll put
a lot of times it comes down to one or two plays, but over the course of the series, and in particular 4, 5, and 6, like they were dramatically the better team in games 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
6, I would say no. I would say, you know what, they found a way. But that's what the playoffs are about. But I will say this. Florida has to – they're going to have to raise their game against Tampa Bay. They're definitely capable of raising their game. Like, I don't think they got anywhere near the best hockey out of Jonathan Huberdeau. He had 3 points. So he's going to have to be a lot better. I mean, Verhaeghe was lights out. Barkov started slow in the series but got better as it wore on. Giroux was fantastic. You know, you want to talk about all the, you know, Ottawa-type – guys, right? I mean, a lot of them Ottawa Senators, Nick Paul and Cody CCU is an Ottawa guy. And Mika Zibanejad, right? How about Claude Giroux and how good he was in particular in game six? So, yeah, I think, anyways, bottom line is they're going to have to be better. And if they're not and they lose to Tampa, then maybe there's a team that says, all right, you know what? You did a really good job as an interim head coach, but we feel to take the next step, we need an experienced coach. We had one here in Joel. Now we're going to go with Barry Trotz, right? I mean, that's – they could go and win the Stanley Cup. Florida's capable of winning the Stanley Cup. There's eight teams left, and they're one of the better ones of the eight. But a lot of hockey to be played. There's two – I think those are probably the only two. You could probably say Edmonton as well, but it depends on how they play. Like, if they lose in six or seven to Calgary, I imagine you're bringing Jay Woodcroft back. I would think. But I guess we'll wait and see. Like, the other teams are not. Daryl Sutter's not going to be let go by Calgary. Certainly, St. Louis is going to continue with Craig Berube. The Rangers will continue with Gerard Gallant.
What about Minnesota? I mean, yeah, Dean Evason.
Yeah, I mean, that was a disappointing way they finished the series. But they had such a good year. And that was probably the first time, right? Like, last year they lost in seven to a Vegas team that was expected to beat them. So that was the first time that they lost with Dean Evason when it was a disappointment. I don't think you just jump off that wagon. Because, again, it's much different when you're talking about an interim coach and someone that you actually have to fire, that you actually hired as your full-time head coach. So I'd be very surprised. Right? This was Bill Guerin's first hire. It's not like he didn't hire him. He ended up firing Bruce Boudreau. Dean Evason took over, and the results have been pretty good.
There's a number of vacancies possible, because there's already some right now. Between what? Philadelphia doesn't have a coach. Winnipeg doesn't have a coach. Feels like if Barry Trotz is involved, some of these other teams that we're talking about in the playoffs right now, or just got eliminated, man, Vegas doesn't have a coach. Boy, when you get fired, sometimes you'd be down in the dumps. If you're Barry Trotz, I don't know if he's down in the dumps. I think he's going to have his pick of a number of different situations.
Well, I think he knew that, right?
But as it's going on, it seems like it's more and more. I mean, Pete DeBoer gets fired today. We'll take a break. Come back and into Edmonton and Calgary. What a performance by Jake Oettinger last night with Dallas Stars. Just, unfortunately, he couldn't make every save. And Johnny Hockey scores in overtime. The Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers are going to meet in the Battle of Alberta. We'll talk about that next year on The Drive on TSN 1200. Well, not the Tiffany version that we all know and love, but 1967. Songs are from, and the year 2004.
The number 12 song of the year in 1967.
Number 12? No wonder is a bad year in music. Should have been way higher than that. Leavers Age, AJ Jackie Beck, Matt Conisvita. AJ, both teams, I think it's fair to say, did not exactly impress in round number one, but both teams got there. The Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers got down 3-2 and had to win both Game 6 and Game 7. Came through when it counted against the LA Kings. And the Calgary Flames had all the trouble in the world with Jake Oettinger and the Dallas Stars. Last night was just ridiculous. At some point in overtime, the shot attempts were like 125-62. And the shots were in the 60s, and Jake Oettinger was just, it was unbelievable. You thought, this kid's not going to lose. But Johnny Gaudreau scores. I felt really bad for him, too, on the goal. He just made a couple of unbelievable saves, and then Gaudreau shoots from the corner and kind of goes in, what, short side up off of his shoulder and his helmet, and it's not a great goal, but the kid stood on his head. Should have been 10-0 last night for Calgary. So?
I don't even know how bad a goal that was. I'm with the guys on the panel last night that basically said, like, it was a perfect shot. Like, I don't even really know how what you do about that one. There was literally that much room there, and he found it. It was a perfect shot. So, anyways, bottom line is, yeah, we get the Battle of Alberta.
So we get two teams not at their best, but finding a way in round number one.
Who was at their best in round one? Colorado, okay. They didn't even really get tested. Beyond that, I mean, was anyone really at their best? Carolina wasn't. Florida wasn't. Tampa Bay wasn't.
But I'm just talking about these two teams.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that's the first round of the playoffs. It's a battle. It's survive and advance. So I don't think anyone you can say, well, oh, my goodness, if they keep playing like that, four rounds, no one's going to touch them. Maybe Colorado again.
Yeah,
but Colorado hasn't been tested yet.
But there are other teams that got through. Like, Tampa played pretty well in the series. It's not like they played really poorly against the Leafs.
They looked very vulnerable and beatable.
Sure, but they're also playing a top four team in the NHL. My whole point here is that Edmonton and Calgary were not. They were playing Dallas and the LA Kings. Not great teams, but they found a way. So how do you...
Again, playoffs throw all that stuff out the window. So
where do you think that they are now, though, going in? Like, do you think there's more relief for one team, that the team feels better than the other here going in? Mike Smith with a shutout in Game 7?
Yeah, I don't know about relief. I think... This series, I mean, I already heard from a buddy today that said he's contemplating going off all social media for the next 2 weeks. Like, this series, I don't think a lot of people appreciate how much dislike there was. I can't say is, but was between these two cities. Like, I lived it. I experienced it. It's like, nothing anywhere else in Canada. Someone mentioned today Montreal and Quebec City, and maybe that's the case. Certainly the Nordiques and Habs had a big-time rivalry right around the same time the Oilers and Flames did. What a time in hockey that was in the late 80s and into the early 90s. But the reality is I can't speak for it. There might be some people that can speak for it in terms of just how the cities were, but it was kind of the focal point, I can say, in Edmonton. The sporting teams, and in particular, back when it was the Eskimos and the Stampeders, and then, of course, Oilers Flames. Like, that was kind of the center point of a rivalry in where the cities didn't like each other. And especially when I talk to people that are older, it doesn't have to be like someone my dad's age, but even like 10, 15 years older than me, it just feels like the dislike for Calgary is that much stronger. Not in terms of the hockey teams, just in terms of the cities. Did not like each other. So now all of a sudden, I feel like the last 30 years, it's been, I don't want to say dormant, but different. And part of the reason I feel that way is because the sporting teams, and in particular the Oilers and Flames, you know, they've only played each other in the regular season. But you know exactly, having done a lot of post-game shows, that when the Ottawa Senators lose to the Montreal Canadiens or the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's a lot different than when they lose to the Minnesota Wild or the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, it's night and day.
There might be some people that are mad about the hockey, but it goes beyond the hockey because people know if you lose to the Leafs and you get embarrassed by, you know, either one of those teams, that you might go into the office or that buddy of yours is going to give it to you, that you're not going to hear about it if you're losing to the Wild, right? And that's Oilers and Flames. And, you know, certainly the football rivalry was there as well. I mean, Edmonton kicked Calgary's ass in sports in the 80s and early 90s. They won 5 straight Grey Cups. They won 5 Stanley Cups. But the Flames, they got it done in 86. But there's a reason, like you see Glenn Sather, you know, giving it to the crowd after Gretzky scores the goal over Mike Vernon's shoulder, right? Like there was genuine dislike between the cities, and it translated to the teams. And I think they appreciate that, but I don't even know if today's players on either team truly appreciate how much the cities didn't like each other. And again, we're going to find out how much they don't like each other in the next couple of weeks, because I feel like it's going to be a little bit, I feel like it's been a little bit dormant, that dislike has always kind of been there beneath the surface. But it is genuine dislike. Like there is not, if all of a sudden an NFL team went to one city or the other and it was the only Canadian team, I can assure you that the fans in one market would not support that city in the other, even if they're called Alberta. We got an Alberta team and they're playing in the NFL and it's Canada's only team. Well, I'm telling you, if that team's in Calgary, no one in Edmonton is cheering for them, and vice versa. So, like, this is going to be 2 weeks of, you know, maybe it is a good idea for people to stay off social media, because they're going to be losing their minds. They're two passionate fan bases, no matter what. They're going to be losing their minds, and whoever loses this series, even though a second-round exit shouldn't be the end of the world for either team. Calgary, a lot of people didn't even expect them to make the playoffs. At Edmonton, you know what? You got a good team, but you made the final eight. That's probably kind of where you are. But don't tell me that after this series, because whoever loses this series, they're not going to live it down for a long, long time when it's been 30 years since there's been a Battle of Alberta.
Do you think it benefits either club in any way to stoke the fire here? To get that, whatever you're talking about, to bring it a little bit more to the forefront? Does it benefit somebody to do that?
I feel like Calgary, because I feel like Calgary's got more guys that can play that way. Like, but Edmonton brought in, that's where, like, bringing in Zach Hyman in the offseason was a good thing. He played well in round one. Evander Kane, I mean, what do you say about Evander Kane in round one? And he is perfect for this type of scenario, right? Like, you're talking about villains, right? That's basically what you're talking about. You're talking about villains. Who can play the role of the villain? I mean, Matt Cassian, Milan Lucic, Zadorov, Tkachuk, Kane, right? Like, those are guys that can play the role of the villain. And the more that one team has guys get under the skin of you know, I think first and foremost, you want to get under the skin of McDavid, because he's the best player in hockey, period. Everyone else is fighting for number two. And we saw exactly how dominant he was in the last seven periods of this series. So I think if you're Calgary, you want to get under his skin. But I mean, there's, you know, more than that, right? I mean, there's more good, whether it's Mangiapane, whether it's Lindholm, whether it's Gaudreau, whether it's Draisaitl, right? There's a lot of good players on both teams in this series. And you've got some guys that, again, can play the role of offensive player, but also physical player / pest, right? Kane, Tkachuk. So, yeah. And then you've got a guy in Daryl Sutter that...
This was going to be my next question.
Yeah. Well, the mind games, right?
It feels like Calgary's in a position of power behind the bench, and I wonder how much Daryl Sutter will try and play mind games with a very young and inexperienced NHL coach in Jay Woodcroft.
Especially in the media, right?
That's what I mean. Yeah.
So I think, now the good news if you're Jay Woodcroft is you're surrounded by some veteran people on that staff. Dave Manson knows what it's like to go deep in the playoffs. Glenn Gullitson's been an NHL coach in multiple spots. Your general manager is one of the more successful GMs in NHL history, and Ken Holland. So it's not like they're a completely inexperienced group, but you're right. I feel like he's a guy that can play those mind games. And we've seen in a series, right, especially between two rivals and nearby cities, we've seen it firsthand how much that can stoke the fire with, you know, Paul MacLean basically doing a tap dance all over Michelle Therrien in that series with the mind games. So it can play a factor.
I don't know Jay Woodcroft nearly as well as, you know, Michelle Therrien at that time. It felt like Therrien was ripe for the picking to get
picked on, and Jay Woodcroft doesn't seem
like that guy.
No, that's the thing. It was the perfect guy to do it to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way Michelle Therrien is wound, right? It didn't take
awfully tight
very much for Paul McLean to figure out that that was a guy. Like, I'm guessing Paul McLean doesn't say the same things if it was a guy that maybe he thought, okay, I'm not really going to get under this guy's skin, but he knew he was going to be able to get under his skin, and he did. And it worked masterfully.
But Daryl Sutter can do that to a lot of people.
Yeah, no, he's a master talking to the media. He is.
Yeah.
Because he's gonna get the conversation going on his terms, right? You might ask question A, but he's going down a different road because this is on his terms, right? He's mm-hmm. driving the bus, and he knows all about it.
This is the second it happened last night, and Goodrow scored, and, you know, they're showing everybody, and everyone's going crazy. And then they show Daryl Sutter and his reaction, and it's kind of like, oh, okay, good. We're there. And it's the first thing I thought of. You got Daryl Sutter, you got Jay Woodcroft, you got the Battle of Alberta. I don't think Woodcroft's going to get sucked in, but I think Daryl Sutter's going to try. And maybe it ends up happening from a play or two in the first couple of games, right? Something Daryl Sutter doesn't like. Can he do it? He doesn't have to get Jay Woodcroft sucked in, but what if he gets the ref sucked in? What if he gets the media sucked in to thinking that the series is going a certain way? Because he wants to. You said it perfectly. I remember, you know, when I became a little bit more of a veteran here, I was down live in the locker room. Thanks very much, Steve. And Jock, tell me about, and it didn't matter what you asked. Jock was going to answer a certain way. Whatever he wanted to get across in the postgame, he got across.
I was only here for one of the Battle of Ontario series, but I feel like Pat Quinn won that battle in terms of the media battle between the two head coaches. And I don't know how many wins that translated to. Maybe it was one. Maybe it was one win over all those series. But I feel like he won that battle from watching the series from afar.
Your thoughts on what the Battle of Alberta will be coming up? I think it's the most intriguing series. Tampa, Florida is going to be awfully close.
Yeah, they're all good series.
The hockey in Tampa, Florida is probably a little bit better. But, man, I'm intrigued with the Battle of Alberta. That's for sure.
They're all intriguing series. Florida-Tampa was the best series for me in the playoffs last year. And if it can come anywhere close to that intensity and speed and with the skill, I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm not sure Edmonton-Calgary in terms of the hockey is going to be as good as that series or even Colorado-St. Louis. But, yeah, it has the potential to be a bit of a powder keg because it starts with the markets. It starts with the fans. They're both super passionate about their teams. You look at how many people, never mind what's going on in the building, look at how many people are outside, you know, supporting their team during those games outside the arenas. And I feel like it is going to be a bit of a powder keg, and emotions are going to have to be kept in check, right? Because it could get out of hand.
Lever Sage, AJ Jakubek, Matt Konizvita, Dave Naylor will join us at 4:25. We'll talk a little bit more about the CFL and where they're at this afternoon here on The Drive on TSN 1200.
The Drive continues on TSN 1200.
Welcome back to The Drive. Lever Sage, AJ Jakubek, Matt Konizvita. We'll talk to Dave Naylor in the 4 o'clock hour. Uber C writes in at 1200. Growing up in Alberta, hated Calgary with a passion. Bugged my father for 2 years until he got tickets to the Battle of Alberta. My pop stepped up. It was a 5-5 draw. Matchup. This one will be one of the best left from Uber C. How do you feel if you go to the Battle of Alberta and it's a 5-5 draw and you leave?
Well, back then, 5-5 tie. When did overtime come into the league? Late 80s? Feel like it was late 80s, right?
Was it that long ago? Really?
Regular season?
I'll have to look it up. I don't know.
Now, obviously that... Sorry? Okay.
1983, as Matt Consvita has told us in our year.
It looks like the first regular season game decided by overtime was October 8th, 1983.
Yeah.
As the Islanders beat the Washington Capitals, what 80s score do you think it would be?
7-6.
8-7.
Missed it by that much.
You were so close.
Now, that being said, you can still have a tie, right, in the 80s because you didn't have the shootout then.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those games, and I'm going to guess that 5-5 tie, Oilers-Flames was probably sometime in the 80s.
Probably a pretty good matchup.
And you know what? If you got a 5-5 tie,
mm-hmm.
you're probably getting a few fights. Like if it was 80s or early 90s Battle of Alberta, like you can count on the fact that you're going to get a few fights. Like those games were, man, those games were mean. Those games were ugly. There was genuine dislike. Like there's, you go on YouTube and you see Tim Hunter and Dave Brown giving it to each other on the respective benches. Man, good comedy to go along with the fact that, yeah, just the trash talking, right? You can only imagine what it was like through all those battles.
Sorry, I think I might have found it here. I'm just trying to...
5-5?
Mm-hmm.
But there's only one 5-5 game in Oilers-Flames history?
No, but you mentioned that you thought it was in the 80s, and I'm thinking I found it here. In sometime in the 83-84 season. I'm trying to narrow it down here.
Well, that would be something. Kenny the Rat Lensman would have been a part of that team back then, too. And he was nicknamed the Rat for a reason.
So who emerges in this series as the procrastinator? Tkachuk?
Procrastinator?
No, the protagonist. Matt, you got to help. Matt, you know, I know you're doing other things, but
I had no idea what word you were looking for there.
You have to police me. Police me sometimes.
I'm trying, and I didn't know. I honestly did not get laundry for two weeks down the road.
Oh, that was a bad one. December 23rd, 1983, Calgary, Edmonton. The game was in Edmonton. I'm going to guess the Uber C from Edmonton. This was the game.
A 5-5 tie. All right.
Who had some of the goals, Lee? Do you have that or just the final score?
No, of course I can't click on the box score right now.
Sorry, what was the year?
December 23rd, 1983.
All right.
So I'll work on that while you talk about who the antagonist is going to be in the series. Or maybe the protagonist. The main character? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah.
So protagonist is the main character.
That's right.
Well, it depends on which
team
you're looking for
that word. I just didn't come up with it.
Depends on which team you're cheering for, right? I mean...
Well, no, I'm a neutral. I'm not cheering for anybody. I'm cheering for maximum chaos. That's been thrown out on the show. I'm cheering for maximum chaos.
I think there are probably more players. Now, again, I am cheering for Edmonton in this series. But I look at, you know, the two rosters, and I think there are more players capable of playing the villain on Calgary than on Edmonton. Certainly, Evander Kane would be high on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Cassian would be high on the list from an Edmonton standpoint. But when you have Matthew Tkachuk along with Zadorov and Lucic, Rasmus Anderson's a guy that can get under people's skin. I know for a fact, I was told this by multiple people, that Rasmus Anderson and Milan Lucic were exchanging words with some members of the Edmonton Oilers in the bubble 2 years ago. So, and Lucic obviously played with a lot of those guys, but Rasmus Anderson didn't. So there's a guy that I think doesn't mind trying to get under the sky. I think they've got more of those guys, right? And in the end, that could be a problem if it's not responded to, right? You think of Boston, Vancouver in the 2011 Stanley Cup final, and both of those teams had more than enough guys that could get under your skin, but it was Boston that found a way to get under the skin of the right guys, the Sedins, right? Yeah. So that's where it could be an interesting factor.
Matt, you came up with the game?
Wayne Gretzky opened the scoring.
Mm-hmm.
7 minutes, 18 seconds into the matchup. Then Calgary with three unanswered. Steve Tambellini, Kent Nielsen, Richard Crom.
I haven't heard Richard Crom's name in a while.
Kenny Linsman.
There you go, the Rat. See? Figured the Rat would have taken some sort of part in this game.
Yeah, he got the Oilers back in it. Then Jim Poplinski restored a two-goal lead. Randy Gregg, Paul Coffey, Yari Curry, and the Oilers take the lead on that Yari Curry goal a minute 22 into the third period.
Couldn't hold it.
Can you guess who tied it up with 51 seconds remaining in regulation time?
Hawk and Lube?
Dan Quinn.
Dan Quinn.
Any fights? Does it say the fights?
The only penalties I have are two-minute minors. So no five-minute majors looked like they were assessed.
Well, Uber, see, if that's not the game, we just had a fun time going down memory lane on December 23rd, 1983. And another 5-5 tie. Because maybe there was more. We're back with Dave Naylor in the 4 o'clock hour, 425. Leaper Sage, AJ Jacksbeck, Matt Conisvita on the drive on TSN 1200.